Right.
Let's start with the fact that Dante now has a new guide. That when we think of Dante's guides, we think of primarily Virgil, who guides Dante roughly through two-thirds of his journey, and Beatrice, who guides Dante roughly through one-third of the journey. Now, I know you're doing mathematics and saying, there isn't anything left. I know what two-thirds and one-thirds is. But right at the end, Beatrice, in a sense, turns Dante over to a third guide named Bernard of Clairvaux. Now, he's an interesting guy that hooks up with Dante, it seems to me, in a lot of ways. First of all, he was a Cistercian monk who lived in the first half of the 12th century. He was, along with all the rest of his order, particularly devoted to the Virgin Mary. In fact, to this day, all Cistercian monks have as their first name Mary. And they wear white robes rather than the traditional Benedictine black, because white is the color of the Virgin because of her purity. Okay? Bernard of Clairvaux was also a great mystical theologian. He wrote, for example, more than 80 sermons, sort of mystically oriented sermons, on one book of the Old Testament, the Song of Songs. And he's regarded as one of the great mystics in the Christian tradition. He was also a zealous church reformer who wrote, on occasion, excoriating criticisms of the popes of his own day, which were, if he were only to know, a shadow of some of the criticisms he would have made had he met the popes in Dante's day. Okay? They were just starting some of the things that were full run by the time that Dante was around. Third, Bernard was a crusader. He was really primarily responsible for the calling of the Second Crusade, because the Pope who called it had in fact been a novice in his monastery, and Bernard was the chief preacher of the Second Crusade, the crusade, of course, of which Cacciaguida was a part. So in sort of universal level, but even at a kind of personal level, because of Bernard's relationship to the Second Crusade and thus indirectly to Cacciaguida, Bernard is the perfect final guide for Dante.
I would add one more thing that makes him an appropriate guide, and that is that he was also a poet. And one way of looking at it is that his poems consisted of a great many important hymns, including hymns to the Virgin. So that as crusader, as mystic, as reformer, as poet, as lover of Mary, he is an appropriate guide. And I think he's different from the other guides. Virgil was his teacher. Beatrice was a teacher of a sort also. Bernard is there to point the way. But I think what's kind of interesting about Bernard is that Dante really wants us to see him as the model for Dante if you take into account the difference between the 12th and the 14th centuries. That is to say, Bernard was able to do his thing within a cloister. Dante now, as a man of the city, is imitating all of the roles of Bernard, but in a very different and new environment. And he's being gutsy enough to say, I also want that experience, or I also was granted the grace of that experience that Bernard himself had, the mystical knowledge of seeing God face to face.
So we have Bernard beginning as the speaker in this last canto with a long prayer to the Virgin, asking the Virgin Mary to reveal God to Dante, and then to protect Dante after the vision when he went back to Earth. The first couple lines are very important as a clue to reading the rest of this canto. O Virgin Mother, daughter of your Son, most humble, most exalted of all creatures. It is, of course, the language of paradox. Virgin Mother, daughter of your Son, humble, yet exalted. It certainly echoes the way that Bernard wrote. It also echoes Mary's own words in the song that she sings in Luke's Gospel, where she talks about being the humble handmaid, where she talks about God raising the lowly and casting down the proud. So it has both a language that would resonate to the Virgin Mary, because it resonates her own language from the Gospel, and it also has the language of the historical figure, writer, poet, mystic, theologian, Bernard of Clairvaux.
And, of course, what he's suggesting is that these paradoxical utterances are necessary to enter into the world of the ultimate paradoxes that he's going to try to not describe to us, but hint to us at. And it turns out that what he's doing at the very end is hinting at the major paradoxes of Christianity, the Trinity, the idea that God is somehow three in one, one in three, and the incarnation, the fact that the human and the divine have somehow mysteriously come together. It turns out that these central mysteries are mysteries that the pilgrim experiences.